from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, a bill to remove the permitting requirement to carry a concealed weapon in the state will not become law with the governor's approval, that after a rare veto signing ceremony at the Capitol today. Another piece of legislation to increase the state's tobacco tax surfaces in the House, but tax increases are a tough sell for delegates, especially in an election year. And the state's chief health officer, Dr. Rahul Gupta, joins us to discuss the impacts several pieces of legislation could have on public health in the state. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Tomlin held a ceremony this afternoon to publicly veto House Bill 4145, a bill that would allow anyone over the age of 21 to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia without a permit. Law enforcement officers have spoken against the bill, citing public safety concerns as a reason to keep the current permitting process in place. But even with the governor's action today, it's still likely the bill will become law.
Our law enforcement officers have dedicated their lives to keeping us safe and helping us in times of need. Now it's time for us to return the favor and veto House Bill 4145 for the safety of our law enforcement officers and all West Virginians.
Governor Tomlin signed the veto message at the Capitol in a room packed with sheriff's deputies, state troopers, and even campus police officers from across West Virginia. House Bill 4145 removes the permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia for anyone over the age of 21. The bill also puts a provisional permitting process in place for 18 to 20-year-olds and includes a $50 tax credit for anyone who goes through the permitting process. Supporters of the bill say it is a constitutional right to carry concealed without a permit, but law enforcement officials have pushed back, calling the bill a threat to themselves and the public. Raleigh County Sheriff Steve Tanner says police officers support the constitutional rights of citizens on a daily basis, putting their own lives on the line.
We do not oppose good laws, but when something is obviously a danger to law enforcement and the public, we have to express our concerns.
Tanner pointed to several public opinion polls that say more than three-quarters of West Virginians oppose the legislation. With the veto, House Bill 4145 heads back to both the House and Senate, where lawmakers will have the chance to reconsider the bill. It takes only a simple majority vote to override a gubernatorial veto. Lawmakers have already taken similar action on vetoes for bills to make West Virginia a right-to-work state and to repeal the prevailing wage. Governor Tomlin vetoed a similar piece of legislation during the 2015 legislative session. A bill to raise the state's tobacco tax was approved by senators earlier in this session and made its first appearance in a House committee today. Delegates on the Finance Committee took up the bill this morning and continued their discussions this afternoon. Liz McCormick joins us with the latest.
Ashton, delegates continued their consideration of Senate Bill 420 for almost 2 hours this afternoon, voting on a few amendments, but in the end, the committee killed the bill. The bill was presented on behalf of Governor Tomlin and originally included a 45-cent tax increase on each pack of cigarettes. As it passed the Senate, the bill bumped that tax up to a dollar. The House Finance Committee adopted an amendment to the bill this afternoon, reducing the tax once again to the 45-cent per pack rate, as well as two other amendments. One removed the tax hike for all other tobacco products, leaving only a tax increase for cigarettes. The second removed the tax for e-cigarette liquids. After the amendments were adopted, only three members of the committee voted in favor of the bill. House Chairman Eric Nelson also voted against it. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick.
In a moment, the state's chief health officer, Dr. Raul Gupta, will join us to discuss the health-related implications of the tobacco tax bill's failure. First, we meet a few more members of the 82nd West Virginia Legislature.
Mike Caputo was elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1996. From Marion County, he represents the House's 50th district. Caputo is a Democrat and serves as the minority whip. He also serves as the minority chair of the House Energy Committee. Linda Longstreth is a Democrat from Marion County. She represents the 50th House of Delegates district. Delegate Longstreth was first elected in 2004. She serves as the minority chair of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. She served as a staff sergeant in the U.S. Army Reserve's Medical Corps. Tim Manchin represents the House of Delegates 50th District from Marion County. A Democrat, he was appointed to fill the seat of his uncle, A. James Manchin, in 2003 and was elected to the seat in 2004. Manchin serves as the minority chair of the House Judiciary Committee, the committee he previously chaired.
As you just heard, the House Finance Committee has killed a bill that would have increased the state tax on all tobacco products, including a new tax on vaporized nicotine. The bill was looked at by some lawmakers as a revenue-increasing measure, but for others, it was the impact on the health of West Virginians that got their support. Joining us now to discuss the latest with the bill is Dr. Raul Gupta. He's the commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health and West Virginia's chief health officer. Dr. Gupta, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you for having me, Ashley.
Now, you testified before lawmakers in the committee this afternoon as they were considering the tobacco tax bill. What's your reaction to the decision today?
Well, I think this was a very reasonable tax based in a lot of scientific evidence to demonstrate that this does impact public health. And it's unfortunate that it did not go forward. As a result of that, I think we're going to see, as I mentioned today at the committee, a number of things. This tax would have prevented about 10,500 children from becoming adult smokers. It would have also prevented about 6,700 premature deaths. And according to the American Cancer Society and Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, it would have also helped over 13,000 West Virginians quit.
Well, I hate to say that politics are a part of it, but it is an election year, and it could be part of the reason. Looking to the future, should lawmakers take up this bill in the future? We've heard some people say that the 45-cent tax that Governor Tomlin wanted wouldn't prevent people from quitting smoking or deter people from starting, and that $1 almost wasn't enough either. Do you know, is there some kind of amount that really impacts health?
Sure. What we know is some tax is better than no tax. What was being considered today was a dollar tax. That would have actually reduced the youth tobacco smoking by 11.5%. Obviously, if you go down in that number, then the benefits start to reduce, and if you go up in that number, it's the reverse. But we do know that taxation is actually a very important strategy as a part of a comprehensive effort to control tobacco, the number one preventable cause of death, as well as the expenditures across the world.
Well, there are budget implications for this bill now, but you are also dealing with budget implications. You oversee the local public health departments that are in every county. And House Bill 4659 is being considered by lawmakers, and it's a bill that would help deal with the budget cuts that those county health departments are probably going to see. Tell us a little bit about what that bill does.
Sure. One of the things we face and are being faced with is the a tremendous budget crisis, and in that sense, folks and areas that we had to were able to shield for a last decade or more were having to cut. We also wanted to provide at the same time solutions, and possible opportunities. We know, as opposed to before, we have over 94%, about 94% adults and 97.5% children in West Virginia that have insurance today. And because of that, because of one of the highest levels of insured population, we want to make sure that our local public health departments, for the services that they are currently conducting, they're able to maximize their billing. One of the things we have is local health departments currently bill, but they're not able to maximize that because there's a lot of red tape in the system. There's a lot of processes, including getting approval from the commissioner's office to be able to raise the rates. And we really wanted to remove that part of the bureaucracy and make it easier for local health departments to be able to bill efficiently and maximally. In fact, a study from WVU showed that if that was happening, there would be up to $7.7 million that could be generated within the system to help. That is when we're facing about $4 million in cuts.
I have to imagine that some of those West Virginians are covered by state health insurance like Medicaid or Medicare. Are we billing a state agency to take money and put it somewhere else? Are those the implications here?
The interesting part is here is this. Medicaid is not 100% paid by West Virginians. There's a match. So for every dollar that is billed, West Virginians pay about 26 cents on that. Similarly, there's a number of services post-ACA that are now part of the essential benefits package. That means that for things like flu shots or other services, especially immunizations, there are no co-payments. And there are free of co-payments. What that means is for a lot of people, it means no cost to them in the pocket, but the health departments are able to generate revenue. And that's really, I think, what we're seeing nationally. Post-ACA, that has been the trend of evolution of public health across this country, to be able to generate revenue, not solely depend on tax revenues or state revenue.
Dr. Gupta, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but tell me in those last couple of seconds, what is a bill that's left at the State House that you think lawmakers should really consider?
Well, I think obviously we've seen what happened with the tobacco tax. I think one of the important parts of this particular bill, we just talked about the ability for local health departments to be able to bill, is very important. Similarly, we want to make sure that we're talking about, there's another one called HIV-STD bill that allows similar measures to be had for able to bill for those services. I think that's the most important part that we're dealing with right now, to ensure that people are able to not only, in the face of cuts, generate sufficient revenue to stay above waters.
Dr. Raul Gupta, Commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health and the state's Chief Health Officer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yesterday, senators narrowly approved a bill that would decrease the state's coal and natural gas severance tax rates by 2% over 2 years. Those cuts would begin in July of 2017, impacting the 2018 and 2019 general revenue budgets. Since the proposal was brought to the Senate floor, Democratic lawmakers have criticized the measure, pointing to the impacts it will have on the budgets of not just the state, but already struggling coal-producing counties. But the Senate's finance chair says there is still time to fix the local government budgets. Senators voted 19-15 Wednesday, pushing Senate Bill 705 out of the chamber on the final day it could be considered under legislative rules. The proposal that would cut the severance tax rates by 2% was defended on the floor by many members of the Republican Party, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael, who says the tax cut will keep West Virginia's mining sector competitive with other states. Severance taxes on all natural resources are collected at the state level, and then a portion of those dollars are returned to county governments. With an overall reduction in the tax, senators who represent those coal-producing counties they say are already struggling because of the loss of coal jobs and revenues, would hurt even more. Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall supports the legislation and says lawmakers will have a year to consider a recalculation of the formula that determines how much money counties receive, possibly giving them a larger share.
They're suffering from the same revenue predicament as the state. They're losing that revenue because the industry is going, if more coal mines shut down, they're going to get less money. And I don't think we should see these layoffs and closings and all the things in these counties. They got used to that revenue. So I see that we should probably fairly consider in the next year how we can change that formula and make it a little fairer for them, rather than pulling the rug out from underneath them and suffer like they're suffering.
But for Hall, the tax cut is about more than just coming to the aid of struggling counties or industries. It's about realigning the state's budget.
Severance tax is not a stable revenue source. When it drops like it did, that's why we're in the trouble we're in, and we need to build this budget around other revenue sources.
Hall says reinstating the grocery tax would be an example of a stable revenue source to build the budget around, but it's too late in this session to consider taking on that kind of tax increase, even if there was the political will to do so. As the bill stands, though, the implications for the 2018 and 2019 budgets are reasons why Governor Tomlin believes the proposal is a bad idea.
Even though certain people say that, you know, that we have the highest or that other states don't have it, you know, we've depended on our severance tax for years in West Virginia to balance our budget.
Earlier this week, Tomlin signed a bill to get rid of a surcharge on coal of 56 cents per ton that was used to pay off the state's workers' compensation debt. Although when the tax was implemented, lawmakers called it temporary, Tomlin says removing it was a step toward helping stabilize the coal industry in West Virginia.
Obviously, that's money back in the coal company's pockets, you know, so hopefully that's going to help some. But when you get into cutting, you know, 2 or 3% off of one of our largest taxes in our state, it really will affect the budget. And not only, you know, currently, but with what's going on with the layoffs, but the years down the road, unless there's something to backfill that amount of money that's being reduced by the reduction in the severance tax.
For now, there are no plans to replace that revenue, but again, Hall maintains lawmakers will be able to consider those measures during the 2017 legislative session. Delegate Don Perdue has served as a member of the House of Delegates for 18 years and announced in December he would not run for re-election this year. Today, the delegate stood to react to a disparaging comment made about West Virginia on Twitter by the host of Comedy Central's The Daily Show. He shared this poem with the chamber.
I want you to understand that these comments are directed toward Trevor Nash of The Daily Show. I don't know about you, but I come from the good Virginia. I've thought for a long time about delivering a little poem I wrote. I'm not very good at it, but it speaks to the anguish we all feel about the way this country feels about us, or seems to, especially Mr. Nash. We provided his power. We put his lights on and we heated his home. Additionally, this state has provided more casualties to this nation's wars per capita than any in this country. So I wrote this 8 years ago. I always meant to deliver it on the floor during my last year. But the moment is now, and bear with me. On that bright, shiny day as you race on your way, climbing fast in the great blue alive, know that we here below see you fly over, slow, from a land where the sky is not so wide. But the scars on our hills should remind you that down here is where the spark starts. They gave you light and warmth in the night from our mountains down into your dark. From way up there in that still clean air, so far from this place you can't see, lie the stones and roads when wars you chose, freedom's heart buried generations deep. So the stones and the scars mark our passage from no man's land to this land you'd leave unknown. Be glad we were here for all you hold dear. Then fly over, we'll be here when you're gone. Go on, fly over, we'll be here when you're gone.
Reverend Milan Dungy has been serving the West Virginia House of Delegates for more than 11 years as a doorkeeper. In fact, he's the longest-serving doorkeeper currently working at the state capitol. Tonight, we bring you a profile of Reverend Dungy on his birthday and his work in the House.
My name is Milan Elijah Dungy, and my title here is I'm a doorkeeper for the House of Delegates. I used to be a chaplain for Union Mission, a men's shelter, so I did a lot of interacting with men that had been kicked out of their house or lost their job or going through family problems and life problems with themselves, you know, drinking and drugging and everything, and lost their direction. And they needed someone to help lead them in the right direction. So as a chaplain there, we ministered to them every day. You know, we gave them things that they could study to show them how to be a better person according to the Word of God. A friend of mine was telling me that they needed, you know, a doorkeeper, you know, and so I brought them a resume and they looked it over and they talked to me and interviewed me and everything, and they said I was hired. So, which was a pleasure to me because it had to give me the opportunity to talk to more people, you know, and help them out in any way I could. I do a lot of preaching. Right now I'm just an evangelist. I had a church in Montgomery, and I had that for about 4.5 years, you know, so the traveling and the older people died off and the younger people moved away, so I've now become like an evangelist, you know, so I go to different churches all over the state of West Virginia, and I preach as much as I can to whomever I can. My responsibility as a doorkeeper is to make sure those who are allowed to come in are allowed to come on the floor. And now there are people that are not allowed to come in here, and we are there to make sure that they don't come in. You know, I mean, sometimes people want to come in to pass a note to a delegate or pass a letter to a delegate during session, and that's not allowed. So we make sure that we know who's coming through that door and who's not coming through the door. Now, if they are visitors, they have plenty of room in the balconies where they can sit, you know, and observe what's going on. But as far as these doors are concerned, we are to make sure that it's secured, that no one comes in that's not supposed to be in. Even as a politician, you know, they have consciences, they have decisions that they have to make, and they want to make the right decisions, especially for the people who put them in the seats. You know, and a lot of times when they see me standing at the door, they feel that God's in the house. I try to be a spiritual uplifting to those who are in the House of Delegates. The most fun thing is meeting new delegates, you know, interacting with them, you know, watching the things that they do, how they interact with one another, you know, and I always say, you know, I know there's Republicans and Democrats, but this is the United States, so how come we can't all come together and work out the problems that the world has, you know, and it works sometimes, you know, but, you know, people have their own ideology of what things should be or how they should go about, you know. And it's interesting to hear, you know, the opinions of others, you know, how they define how a bill should be and what it's going to help or who it's going to help, you know. And it's enlightening to me to see people do things for other people.
Except
Bob Williams represents the state's 14th senatorial district. A Democrat, Williams is from Taylor County. He was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2008 and previously served as the chair of the Senate Committee on Economic Development. William Flanagan is a Republican from Monongalia County. He represents the 51st House of Delegates district. Delegate Flanagan was appointed to the House in January 2016 to replace Delegate Amanda Paston, who resigned. Flanagan is a practicing attorney who attended West Virginia University's College of Law. Joe Statler was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, he represents the 51st House of Delegates district. Delegate Statler is from Monongalia County. Statler calls himself a history buff and enjoys collecting antiques.
K Committees in the House of Delegates will hold two public hearings tomorrow, and West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring you both hearings live. The House Government Organization Committee will focus on Senate Bill 267, a bill to modify the procedures to remove school district and municipal officers. That hearing begins at 8 a.m. Following at 9, the House Judiciary Committee will listen to members of the public who have concerns over Senate Bill 6, a bill that would set up a drug testing process for welfare recipients. Again, you can watch both of those hearings live tomorrow on the West Virginia Channel or on our website, wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.